You're going to do awesome.
All right, thank you.
All right, let's open up in a word of prayer here. Bow our heads and say, Lord, I give you this day and I give you this time for your will to be done. I give you thanks and praise for this opportunity and the country to do this in, that we may speak freely of you. I give you thanks and praise for the people who are here and those who are not and who are listening for wherever they are. And I pray you just move me out of the way and just let me be your instrument to this study. And I thank you in your holy and righteous name. Amen. All right. I'm going to start off with just a little bit of an explanation. During my wandering years, I would say probably in my early 20s, I explored a lot of different faiths and religions, even though I was brought up in a fairly strict religious household. Mom was a Roman Catholic, and Dad was a Lutheran, although somewhat lapsed in beliefs. But still left a nice little void in the heart and in the soul. And there was a number of different faiths to look into. One of them, of course, was Mormonism. Very strong presence up here. And someone at some point in my 20s handed me a copy of Dianetics. And say, hey, you got to read this. This is great stuff. I tried. Let's just say the wordage was difficult. And after a certain point, it's forget it. Couldn't do it. Later on, as I worked in my sideline career as a science fiction writer, I came across a very familiar name by the name of L. Ron Hubbard. And I said, where have I heard that name before? Dianetics. Then you go into Scientology. And just became a bit of an interest. And then later on, you keep hearing about what these people are doing, what they believe, what you've been told, what you see. And then later on, what kind of got into my heart was watching the series by Leah Remini. While she is somewhat blunt, abrupt, and her language is crude, nothing what she said was wrong. And for someone who has been in Scientology, in her case, since childhood, I did my own little research, did my own looking into reading, not just on the internet, but actually talked to a few people, looked up a few cases, read a few things. And while someone may laugh at Scientology, it is nothing to be laughed at. And I'm going to start off here in a bit on the life of L. Ron Hubbard himself, because this is, I believe, as important as, say, Joseph Smith as the creation of Mormonism. If you got to know who the person is, where they came from, what they believed, how they got to the point. So I'll begin with that. The life of Lafayette Ronald Hubbard, his full name. Born in 1911 in Tilden, Nebraska. Father joined the Navy in 1917 towards the end of World War I. And basically toured when he was a boy. Hubbard toured the South Pacific, Guam, the Philippines, other places. Didn't write very well in his journals. Didn't speak well of the people there. Didn't seem to like them too much and preferred the United States. Came back to the United States, attempted to join the U.S. Naval Academy and failed. After high school, went to George Washington University, studied a variety of courses. Most notably atomic physics, as it was called then. Basically, he left college before he was asked to leave because his grades were dropping like stones. Couldn't seem to keep focused, although he had a very grand idea, you know, of what he wanted to be in life. Tried adventuring a little bit, tried a little gold prospecting by the year 1930, which failed. Came back and decided to write, have a writing career. He was married by this time, and while his wife and young children were bouncing between relatives, he was in New York City writing. Very prolific writer, extremely prolific. I have several books with some of his short stories. It came out to somewhere around 1,500 short stories that he's written in his career time. He wrote everything. He wrote about just about anything: adventure, romance, travel, westerns. Most notably, science fiction is what he's noted for. His work habit was extreme. He would be in his hotel room, and he was one of the first investors in an electric typewriter. It was a huge old thing, had to be bolted to the desk. And what he did, and what other writers did, was they buy the huge blocks of butcher paper, which looks like a roll of, you know, your standard paper towel, but it was a butcher paper, and it's about the right size for manuscript paper that we would normally see, but you would roll it in your typewriter, hammer out your story, reel it out, cut it off, roll it up, send it off to the editor for publication. And that was actually a habit until in the 1940s. But this was not a good time for writers. Your average writer made maybe a penny a word. That's how they were paid. And so you had to put out a lot just to make it happen. He was just a little bit above average. He got some credit, some accolades, but never really made it. His most notable book came out in 1940 called Typewriter in the Sky, still cited as one of the better works of that era, but it never really went anywhere. In 1938, while in a dentist's chair, he claimed to have had a near-death experience. He was dead for 8 minutes in the chair. When he returned, he wrote a book called Excalibur, and we'll get to that in a minute, but no one would publish it because it was just too far out. So he returned again, trying to get some money for his family, which is at this time he was having major family problems. He decided to come to Ketchikan, Alaska, and did something called the Alaska Radio Experiment, if I read that correctly. Well, the problem was engine failure. Stuck in Ketchikan, wrote for the Ketchikan paper, and with proceeds from his other works, was able to get the engine repaired and return home. After this point, needing some stable income, and with the coming war, in 1941, before December, he joined the U.S. Navy. Actually graduated, came out as a lieutenant, junior grade, assigned as an intelligence officer, and sent to Melbourne, Australia. Melbourne pretty much turned him back. Within a few weeks, his commanding officer said, quote, "He needed too much supervision due to his elevated self-importance, and he was a bit too talkative." So he returned back to the United States, to Massachusetts, and was given, after training, given a command of a newly commissioned gunboat. But he was relieved of command before he even left port. Commanding officer said, "Temperamentally unsuitable to command a ship." Navy then sent him to submarine chase school, where in 1942, he was given command of a ship, a subchaser, and it actually left dock. 5 hours after leaving dock, he reported that he had found an enemy submarine and was chasing it. For 3 days, he chased a non-existent submarine. He mistook a known magnetic deposit in the waters off of California as an enemy submarine. They literally had to call him back. He was relieved to command of this ship after he accidentally sailed into Mexican waters and performed live fire drills off of Coronado Island. After that point, he was hospitalized on and off until 1944, where he was assigned as a navigation officer aboard a ship in Portland, Oregon. Reported a sabotage attempt aboard his ship, where the OSS and the FBI came aboard and found no evidence. From that point on, he was in and out of hospitals in California and Pasadena, and basically was put on an inactive duty list. During this time, in 1945, Hubbard became involved in a satanic cult in Pasadena with connections to the famous Satanist Aleister Crowley. Black Sabbath wrote a song about him many years later. There he met his second wife and married her before divorcing his first wife, which that came in 1947. They were married in 1946, his second wife. So the math isn't there. This practice, this cult, did very weird things, and as I told some other people, I won't repeat them in front of adults. They were that bad. As this was winding down, he became involved in a money scheme involving yachts, where he would just sail them around or watch them or whatever. He wrote some, but not making a lot of money. This is the post-war years. There's a lot of things going on. Fiction was changing. Didn't manage to put much out. So he suffered a kind of mental breakdown. And while he was in hospitalization, he found a way, he thought, of a new way of psychiatric treatment. This new way became, when written down in 1950, as Dianetics. I'll explain how Dianetic works here in a bit. I just want to get through his biography a little bit. Dianetics was an immediate hit, but it was also an immediate failure. He pushed a little too hard. Hubbard did a demonstration in a hotel room in front of 2,000 people with the claim that this woman would, her improved IQ, her amazing memory capabilities and everything else, turn into a fiasco. She couldn't even remember the color of his tie, and she was literally standing next to him. Couldn't remember the color of his tie. He lost controlling interest of Dianetics, and again tried to go back into the writing field. But again, this is the early 1950s. Times were changing. The money pay scale in writing was just as bad as it was back in the 30s, and he just couldn't make a go of it. Now we come to the interesting part. In early 1953, Hubbard and other fellow writers who were all lamenting their lack of success. Hubbard in particular was just bemoaning. He was nearly broke. His second marriage is on the rocks, and he didn't know what to do next. The story varies a little bit, but from what I've been able to piece together through secondhand reports and other sources, during this meeting, a certain science fiction writer by the name of Lester Del Rey, who had been a child evangelist in his youth, came up with this idea. Ron, you need to start a religion. What do you mean? Tax exemption. You can get whatever you want. Say whatever you want. You're good. Light went on. In 1954, the first Scientology church was formed and opened. Now I'm going to get into Scientology in itself. First thing I'm going to start saying is, back when I was mentioning in 1938, he had a near-death experience and wrote a book called Excalibur. This was his attempt to say something had opened in his mind. Dianetics was an expansion upon that. Dianetics, when it came out, was secular. It treated the human body and the human brain as an electrical field and an electrical system, such as a computer or calculator. And that your problems, addiction, low IQ, bad eyesight, acne, whatever, was all a part of your human engrams, which is your brain, your thought patterns, being out of alignment or having, as we would call it, false data, bad code. Through his e-meters, auditing and training, basically like therapy, one can remove the bad code. One can heal oneself. Addiction, gone. Bad skin, gone. Glasses, gone. Everything. It's all a matter of the electrical field. The problem was it didn't quite go as far as he wanted it to. When Scientology appeared, he bought back his controlling interest. He had lost the controlling interest in Dianetics, but he bought it back because the church went from 53 to 54, it jumped to over 2,000 members. Some say it were up to around 5,000. And they were all paying. He got back Dianetics and he incorporated it into Scientology. Now, this is what the basis, and I'm actually condensing this a little bit because when you start getting in the weeds with this, your head will just pop because it is extreme. First off, how it works. You, all of us, the human race, is what they would call an operating thetan. Now, thetan, I had to go look this up. It's a Greek word. And basically, it's a spirit, meaning spirit or spirituality. In essence, in some areas, it's called your immortal soul, your immortal spirit, nearly omnipotent, undying, capable of going anywhere. In Scientology, there are 8 levels of operating thetan. You have your basics, which is us, the fool, the basic, the entry. And you go up through a series of auditing, training, and a little bit of cash. Each level, you pay a little bit more. It's when you reach OP3 or OP4 level, and I had to actually do a little search on this one to make sure, but it all depends on your spiritual maturity and how much you've actually done. One gets the opportunity to learn the full history of the beginning of Earth, man, everything else. Bear with me. The only caveat I put on this is that if you were to ask a Scientologist about this in this level, some would flatly deny you. This does not, no, not a part of this. Others would say, how did you ever find out about this? And some, and this goes back to Leah Remini, and this is something I've also heard from other ex-Scientologists, is you're not supposed to know that. But here it goes. Hold on. 75 million years ago, Earth was part of the Galactic Confederation. A Lord Xenu was about to be deposed. To prevent this, he tried rounding up his enemies, billions of them. There were 26 planets and billions of people, overpopulated. He rounded up his enemies, removed them from their physical bodies, and then bound them, how, I don't know. He bound them and put them in volcanoes around the Earth. On top of that, he then dropped hydrogen bombs on top of them, destroying souls. These soul fragments were then collected, rounded up, and then exposed to, as they put it, misinformation. What is this information, you may ask? God, Christ, devil, angels, anything that is not to do with the Galactic Confederation. And these bits of souls were then released back on the earth. And the infected, as they put it, are souls. So, in addition to yourself, you have these little bits of fetid souls within you. They, in turn, are giving you your problems. Addiction. Bad eyesight. Failing health. Name it. This is where the Dianetics come into play. Using the same function as the previous Dianetics, one is audited. One is finds the Thetan within you and helps move it out or incorporate it, make peace with it, whatever the case may be. In turn, you achieve higher levels of spiritual consciousness, mentality. On and on. Now, many members claim this method, this OP levels and this auditing, the EMUs and everything else, has helped them. Which I will not attest to, but they claim it focuses the mind, improves the memories, helps the body, helps one overcome various disorders, physical and mental, addictions. I go back to a story where Christy Al is being interviewed about when she first read Dianetics, and she claimed she was doing drugs at the same time she was reading the book. And she says, wow, this is great. And then when she actually got into it, she was all cured. No more addiction. However, as empirical evidence, this cannot be supported from any outside source because they don't normally see an outside doctor. Doctors are not part of their routine. Now, the speed at which Scientology grew was rapid. I mean, it was fast. Within a few years, Hubbard had a fleet of ships, which we now know is called Sea Org, which traveled the world. They sought members, and still do. It's mainly for the younger people, but you are sent around the world. Again, mission trips. We would call them a mission trip. Other times, they're education. And in some cases, they're used as, basically, in the early days, Hubbard would be on these ships, or he was considered a commodore, and this is where he would be living. He would not be touching soil, as they say. And as one might expect, this secret, you know, this organizations and these practices came into, shall we say, conflict with other governments. In their recruitments, they tried setting up bases in all over the world, in Africa, in Europe. But as one may expect, this was not welcome in certain areas, and some people were actually complaining against the Scientology. In the 1970s, Hubbard and his third wife, by now, were convicted in absentia in France for fraud. They considered it a fraud. The church itself, as you can probably guess, is rather secretive. They don't like outsiders knowing their practices. To be in the church is one thing. You are audited on a regular basis. You are also watched and listened to. The what they call auditing sometimes is, what did you say against the church? For a number of years, while L. Ron Hubbard was still alive, one was questioned, did you say something bad about Hubbard? About our founder, our creator? That was means for, as we would call it, excommunication. You did not go against leadership. You did not question your leaders. You did not question an order. If you were told to do something, you do it. There were been instances, several have reported, ex-members have reported, there were like purges where they would actually go around various the churches and ask, you know, members, basically, have you said anything against Scientology? Have you spoken about our ways to other people? And even to the point of have you zapped anyone? Legitimate question that they were asked. Have you zapped anyone? Have you spoken about Hubbard with a police agency? That sort of thing. And as you can probably guess, at this time, Scientology had come under scrutiny from many, many organizations, ranging from Interpol, the FBI, and the IRS, along with various other local and state police agencies. Human rights commissions has investigated them for years because some of the people who were with the Sea Org complained about the living conditions and the how they were living. In fact, several times over the years, Scientology has lost its tax-exempt status, only to regain it. At present, it is still in the tax-exempt status, however, it is also still under investigation by several different agencies. Now, they also they have their own schools, they have their own printing presses, and movies. They actually have their own film division. Any commercial you see for Dianetics is produced by the Church of Scientology. And going back quickly to Dianetics, a lot of people assumed, oh yeah, the book Dianetics, I see it, you see it everywhere, any bookstore. It's got the picture of Dianetics and it's got the volcano exploding and everything. That picture didn't show up on the books until in the 1960s. That's when it was more or less confirmed that Dianetics and Scientology were one and the same now. One instance, the church itself attempted to spy on the U.S. government. As you can guess, that probably didn't meet with too much enthusiasm. As a matter of fact, Hubbard and several other leaders at the time were indicted, but no real charges were brought against him. Now, I'm going to get to where we see them. How do they recruit? And how are they different from us, from a Christian? Excuse me. Like most, they seek the vulnerable. They seek people who have been grieving, people who have lost, people who are wandering, people who have just wandered into one of the churches. And it looks great. You see things and you hear things that will just, you're going to be a better person. You're going to get smarter. You're going to get better. You know, all you have to do is this and a little cash. And they have their own little core of celebrities, probably more so than anything else. That is a draw. I mean, we can obviously name one very famous Scientologist by the name of Tom Cruise, who was with the church since his early 20s. He was introduced to Scientology by his then-wife, Mimi Rogers, and he jumped right on it. And at the time, if I remember reading that correctly, he was having difficulties with his family and with his career and a few other things. Again, vulnerable, and we've seen where he went. Others include John Travolta, who made the film Battlefield Earth, which is not on the high list of watchable movies. Kirstie Alley, as mentioned before. And here's a few names that you might not think of. Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson. Catherine Bell from JAG. Elizabeth Moss from The Handmaid's Tale. And musicians Beck and the late Isaac Hayes, who did the theme song for Shaft, and it was on the TV show South Park, which was not exactly known for being respectful of religion or any institution. Over the years, South Park has slammed Christianity, Judaism, Mormonism. But when it came to Scientology, Isaac Hayes, who at the time when he was alive, was a Scientologist, quit, saying that they were being sacrilegious. And then Jenna Elfman, from another television show, Dharma and Greg, I believe it's called, is a Scientologist. She compared the way Scientology is treated to the way Christians were treated in the first century, with oppression and distaste. How many members does Scientology have? Unknown. Scientology itself claims between 8 to 12 million followers worldwide, with 4 million in the United States alone. U.S. Census reports say that is probably not accurate. As a matter of fact, if there were 4 million practicing Scientologists in the United States, they would actually be competitive with the Lutheran Church. But they are not. As a matter of fact, in a lot of countries, they barely hit 1,000. The United States, it is believed, if they were to do an actual count, is between 150 to 200,000 practicing. There is a church here in Anchorage. I don't know how big they are. Didn't want to find out. And again, the recruitment is very simple. They look for the vulnerable. They look for the people seeking the spiritual. I stress this mainly because in one of the episodes that Leah Remini did, they were actually reaching out to like the Black Panthers and the Islamic Brotherhood for new members to join with them. Why? Expanding the base. And they have school materials, and they want to get into churches. They want to get into other faiths. So I look at this, and I'm going, I can laugh at the origins. I can shake my head at the tales of Lord Xenu and say, you know what, I could actually do a better job than that. You know, I really could. Even the ancient astronaut theorists come up with better stories. And that's one of my guilty pleasures, I'll raise my hand, is ancient astronauts. But at least in some cases, they will actually present a fact or two. And in some cases, they have actually even accidentally, I'm sure not on purpose, because one of them, George Tsilakos, claimed he is an outright atheist, doesn't believe in angels, doesn't believe in God, yet brought up the fact that there are seashells and salt, sea salt on the tops of mountains. And this is when they were talking about Noah's flood. Of course, you know, they have other reasons for it, but you just gave proof to Noah's flood. But people are following this. People are being recruited into Scientology. Having worked with Sparks and seeing the vulnerability of these young minds, to me that is a red flag that some of these people are out there. The level that these people will go to achieve, to get more recruits, they're looking just as, they're probably looking harder than a lot of churches are in terms of seeking the lost soul. And their promises are great. I mean, look at, if you look at their brochures, it's a beautiful thing. You just got to know what's going on behind it. I go back to the warning that Paul gave to Timothy in 2 Timothy. It's a warning to me and kind of a prophecy that we're seeing coming true. And I'll read this to you. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap for themselves teachers, and they will turn away their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. That's a very, very true statement today, as it was back then. I look at what we do as a Christian compared to what a Scientologist would do. If someone were to come and ask me about Christ, how do you know Christ exists? Well, I can give them my testimony. Okay, how do you know that what the Bible says is true? I kept reading, it's just a bunch of stories. Well, as Pastor Freddie here has said, and others have said, even today, he says, you can go and find and see proof that the Bible is true. And then you would be asked, okay, what about these contradictions? I, as a Christian, would say, you know what? Let's go research that. Let's go take a look. If you were to ask a Scientologist about, well, how do you know what L. Ron Hubbard said was true? Scorn, disbelief. And for those members who do have questions and are removed, they are what they call disconnected. You become what George Orwell described in 1984 as an unperson. More so, if you are a person in the higher ranks, like Alea Remini or others, you are publicly discredited. You are told you are the worst kind of human being on the face of this earth. Whatever they can find, that is what they will to say about you. You have nothing. You leave everything behind. Anyone who has ever escaped, and I use that word not lightly, but it is the truth, where literally I've heard the stories and seen them, where people have literally got into trunks of cars to be driven out of parking lots to escape. That's how bad they needed to go. I've heard and seen where people have left family members behind, their own children, just to get out of there, just to get away from it. And again, a lot of these children are told, that's not a family member anymore. This could be a mother, a father, aunt, uncle, grandparents. Doesn't make any difference. If someone, again, were to question Christianity, you know, if someone in this church was a question, I don't see anybody here saying, you're wrong, get out of here. I don't see where our love for other people would say, you know what, you've got questions. Let's find the answers. Let's look through this book. Because the Bible is not just, well, again, the Bible explains the Bible. I've heard that many times. But again, also, the Bible has sources outside of it that back the Bible. You can go into secular history. You can read some of the accounts of Josephus and some of the other historians. And considering how historians were treated back then, a historian had to get their sources right. Because a lot of them would face death if they misquoted or mis, even the smallest detail. Whereas there's nothing to support Scientology other than what others have said. So in my conclusion of cults and the occult, I go by what we say every Sunday. Go therefore, baptizing in the name, spreading the gospel. Because knowledge is power. And I look at this for people who are looking for this type of thing. And this strikes me hard, is that these people are looking and they are willing to believe. There is a hole in all of us at one time that only God can fill. And if they don't hear the gospel, something like Scientology will come and fill that void. And I go back to also the fact that he was a practicing Satanist for a while. And you know the devil just loves this. He said, I don't care how you do it. Just don't make another Christian. Don't make another follower of God. So, and again, we can laugh. We can shake our heads. We can wonder. But it's there. And that's something to be on guard for. These people have a great pitch, but you've got to know. You have to know. Something we learned years ago when I was doing retail electronics, not only do you know what you know, what you have, know what the other person has. Know it as just as well as what you've got. You know our Bible? Fine. But we also need to know what else is out there. And we need to learn how they do it. So in conclusion again, I say be on guard. Pay attention. These type of people are out there. They exist. And with God's help and grace, we can turn some people away from them. All right. That's all I have to say. So close us in a word of prayer here. Lord, I pray for those who are listening and those who are here and those who are not. I pray that your hand and your protection comes down and just be with all of us. With all those who are listening and all those who are seeking, I pray you guide them to a place where they can hear your word and come to know you in a more personal way. And I pray all this in Christ's holy name. Amen.